Chapter 14. Let's go for a swim. It was early. Soon the hot summer day would start. It had been hot the day before as well, and long into the night. But for now, there was a cool breeze moving through the carriage house windows. Robert had been up for several hours, sitting at the table that looked out onto the patio. Contemplating with his fourth, fifth cup of coffee as he again rehearsed his decision. Through repetition, Robert hoped to lock it in, reinforce it, and encase it in concrete so it could not be changed, not by him, not by God, not anyone, not even Kelly. But how was he going to tell her? It hadn't been Manny's caution about Kelly, that she was some kind of evil force he needed to stay away from. Robert felt more protective of Kelly than ever. Nor was it fear of Sam Gallo. Sam didn't give a damn about him and wouldn't bother tracking him down if he took off, as long as he left without Kelly, which is what he had determined he was going to do. Robert snorted. It was the height of conceit to think Kelly would want to go with him anyway. He couldn't even hope for such a thing. It was so far-fetched. Still, that was an image that remained lodged in the back of his head. Kelly walked out to the gazebo and, as was her custom, sat down in Robert's spot. She was wearing her white bikini. Robert went to his bedroom and put on his cutoffs. He had no intention of getting into the pool, but he wanted to look the part. Then he walked out to talk with her. "Hi, what are you doing?" Kelly had been writing in a notepad when Robert walked up. She quickly turned it over. "Hi. Just writing some stuff." "Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I can leave." "No, it's okay. I'm trying to write something." Kelly turned the notepad over, face up. It was blank. So far, nothing. Robert sat down next to Kelly. Both were quiet for a while, then Kelly said, "I'm trying to write a story. I feel like I have something in me to say, but nothing's coming out. It's all jumbled up in my head. Maybe I can help." Kelly laughed. "No thanks. This is not a porn story. This is a love story. It's a wonderful, beautiful story." Robert laughed too. "All I've ever heard from you were porn stories. I have more than that in me too. Let me help you get started."
"Sure.
Go for it, pal." "Okay. Stories are always about some kind of quest. So, have someone starting out on a journey. Let's have it a young girl on a train. Does anybody ride in trains anymore? Trains are more romantic, but make it a plane if you must." "No, a train is good. She's on a train traveling through Europe." "Europe has trains, right?" "I'm pretty sure they do." "Then a train through Europe it is. Very romantic. How old is she?"
"I don't know.
If you want this to be a love story, she needs to be old enough. She's 16. Let's make her 16. Her body is changing. She's awakening to it. Wondering about it. What it means. What her life will be like."
"Okay.
We have a 16-year-old girl, riding on a train through Europe, alone. Why is she alone?" "She has just left a boarding school and is being sent somewhere else. She didn't want to leave. It was forced on her."
"By her parents?"
"No. Let's make her an orphan. That makes her story more heartbreaking." That satisfied Kelly. "Parents dead. Check." While she's writing, she finds an envelope in her bag. She hadn't seen it before. She doesn't know how it got there. Must have been one of her friends put it there as she was leaving, or maybe a passenger while she was sleeping. She opens it, and there are several sheets of notebook paper that have been written on. She starts reading. It's a story. From the first paragraph, she's hooked. The rocking of the train, the clattering of the wheels fade as she reads. She forgets she's on a train as the story pulls her in. She laughs at parts of it, so loud the passenger across the aisle gives her a dirty look. She turns her head toward the window and cries at the sad parts. The towns, and villages, and farms of Europe pass by her window. She is in another time and place. She is in the story. There was only one chapter in the envelope. She must read the rest. Who was the girl? What happens to her? Is she always going to be alone? Who wrote it? When she got off at the station, she called her friends at school to find out. No one knew who wrote the story. Kelly had been quiet while Robert talked, hardly breathing, carried by the story he told. So who did write it? You did, Kelly. It's your life. It's your story. And it's a wonderful, complicated story about a beautiful, fragile young girl. You just need to tell it. Kelly didn't turn her head away when she wiped tears from her cheeks. I love you. Robert didn't respond and sat and stared at the pool. Kelly took his hand and stood up. It's such a nice day. Let's take a walk along the beach. Robert thought that a little comical. There was not much of a beach to walk along. When he was alone here last summer, he had thought to do that. But as far as he could see, the shoreline this far north of the city was a nearly continuous barrier wall of large stones set to prevent erosion. Prevent erosion, and collect driftwood, plastic bottles, beer cans, and dead fish. No beach, and no place to walk. Each property owner had erected fences, hedges, and structures that prevented anyone from walking along the shoreline. Gallo's property was similarly fortified from intrusion. But it did have a beach. The wall of stones from the south changed at his property and jutted out into Lake Michigan, then bent to face the lake where there was a 40 to 50 foot gap, after which the wall continued, curling back to the shore where it headed off to the north. The result of all this was a cove, open to the lake, shielded from the sides, and private. Sand had been hauled in by the truckload and, behold, a beach. It was to here that the couple walked. Kelly leaned against Robert. There's almost no waves today. I love to come out here when it storms. The waves come hurtling against the breakwater, throwing spray up that the wind whips into my face. I stand and yell against it. The lake, with those waves rolling in, looks like an ocean. Have you ever gone to the ocean? Robert asked. No. I've just stayed here. When I was in college, I visited some friends in California. Spring break. We all got drunk, of course. They wanted to show me the ocean. It was a few miles away. It was late at night, so it was dark. We parked in a parking lot and walked through an underpass. It had been calm in the lot, but I heard a rumble when we started into the tunnel. As we walked further, the rumble turned into a roar, as if from a living thing, like a crouching, warning beast. It was also dark, especially in the underpass. You couldn't see the sides of it. I could barely see the guys I was with. There was only black in front, and the roar was coming from there and echoed along the tunnel. I was pretty drunk. I felt like Dante must have felt when he entered purgatory. Kelly put a hand on Robert's shoulder to balance herself while she took off her sandals. Then she stepped barefoot along the water's edge. Robert followed beside her. When we got through, and there was more light. The tide was in, so the beach was narrow. Rushing toward us in the night, their silvery hair flying off in the wind, were towering black, shimmering, shifting, chaotic waves of ocean. I thought they would swamp us and wash us away. But each one would collapse on the beach before us. Except, occasionally, a more aggressive one would come dashing in and race up the beach after us, washing the sand from underneath my feet, its arms swirling around my shoes and legs, almost up to my knees. I'd lose my balance and almost fall down. You were a little drunk. Kelly reminded him. Robert laughed. Yeah, that probably had something to do with it. He picked up a small stone and tried to skip it across the water. We went to the beach every day that week, hung out, and gawked at girls. The ocean was never the same as that first night. The waves still came in, washing the sand from underneath our feet, pulling at us. It was friendly play. But that first night, it felt like it was conscious. It knew I was there. And it was not so friendly. Robert chuckled. And it didn't like me there. Kelly stopped walking and turned to Robert. She was smirking. So, you're one-upping me with your ocean story. Sorry, I'm not trying to do that. Kelly gave Robert a little punch in his stomach. This may not be your ocean, but we can still swim in it. She ran into the water and waded out to where it was almost to her hips. Can I tempt you to come in? She could, at least to her hips, and Robert followed Kelly as she walked backward, further out into the cove. At least there are no sharks here. Then she turned and swam out. Robert had followed Kelly to where the water was up to his hips. He could see the sandy bottom. He looked up to where Kelly was swimming toward the gap in the breakwater. There the water got darker. Robert felt his stomach tighten, but he continued and shuffled out to where the water was up to his chest. He could feel the sand crunching beneath his feet. The waves lapped against him, occasionally splashing water on his face. This was far enough. Too far, really. He started shuffling backward toward shallower water. Kelly had swum out to the gap and turned and waved at him to join her. You've got to man up. This is dumb. Robert muddled forward, and the bottom steadily dropped away. He reached the end of the sand. The bottom was now muck and dead matter, the water up to his neck. He took a breath, lifted off, and paddled, focusing everything he had to stay afloat. He looked up when he got to the gap. Kelly had gone far beyond. Robert looked at the stones in the wall, green with algae at the water level. He looked through the water and followed the wall down. He could still see the bottom here, but when he looked further out, he could not. Kelly, don't you think this is far enough? He yelled. She didn't hear him. Or, perhaps, she chose to ignore him. A wave splashed in his face, and he swallowed some water. Then he followed her, and the lake bottom dropped away. Kelly was treading water, letting Robert catch up to her. There's a bunch of seaweed here that we have to swim through. Robert reached the seaweed, a tangle of green fingers coming up out of the murky bottom. They were cold, slimy, caressing him as the waves washed them back and forth against him. The mass of them entangled him, wrapping around him as in an old hag's embrace. We have to get further out. They stop growing when the water is deeper. Kelly turned and swam. Robert called after her, water again getting in his mouth. How deep does it get? I don't know. I think the lake averages about 300 feet. But there may be holes where it's thousands or more. Robert paddled after Kelly. The waves had been small inside the cove and seemed to be tempered even out to the massive seaweed. But now there was no restraint, and the wind had picked up. A wave would lift him where he could see the sky and the horizon across the lake, and Kelly splashing toward it, then drop him into its trough and wash over him. He could see through the water, through its green veil. There was no bottom, just the yawning deep places where Leviathan slept. Robert was tired. His arms on fire. It's crazy. Crazy to swim out this far. He looked back. The cove a small mouth in the long gray breakwater, the mansion would fit on a Monopoly board. He could see the Chicago skyline stretching off to the south. Kelly had stopped. Swim under my legs. I don't want to. You're such a big baby. Common, see how deep you can go. Robert hung on to Kelly, and using her as a pole, hand by hand lowered himself. He felt the pressure increase on his head. He gripped her feet, and looked down into the greenish expanse. He felt dizzy, like he was looking down from a great height. He was a microbe with a memory of the ooze from which he came, and to which he was returning. The ooze carried the memory, of himself, of beginnings, of God and of evil. Even to eternity. Robert pulled himself back to the surface and sucked in a breath, choking on the lake water he swallowed. Now you're getting the hang of it. Kelly swam further out. Robert struggled after her, trying to keep his body on the upper 6 inches of the lake. Trying to ignore what lay beneath him. Unable to not look, drawn like a doomed mouse, spellbound by the sight of an approaching snake. There was no bottom. Elusive serpentine shapes glided along at the edge of his perception, slinking, twisting. He was out of breath. His arm muscles screaming. He could barely move them. He swallowed more lake. Then he was cut in half when his head and chest hit icy cold water. His legs and feet were still in warmer water. Kelly had been waiting for him. This is where the current starts. Robert panicked. His arms flailed. He gulped for air but got more lake water. Kelly grabbed his arm and shook him. Tread water for a while to rest. Robert couldn't do that. He was kicking frantically. He's not putting his legs down into that.
Listen, float on your back. You can do that for hours.
No. There's no crazy way Robert is turning his back to it.
It's taking him down.
His head is shaking, splaying water.
Robert, Kelly yelled. Look at me. Where is land, where is help, where is anything but the waves washing over his head?
Excited shapes darted around him. The water turned to the buoyancy of air, and he dropped toward the bottom.
Kelly's hands grabbed his head and pulled him up.
You're a big baby.
Kelly still yelling.
Hold still. She grabbed his arms, herself bobbing under the surface, sputtering out water when she came back up.
Roll over on your back, lay on top of me.
Robert was choking, but he complied.
Kelly's left arm wrapped around Robert's chest and held him tight against her.
Then with her right arm, she pulled them back through the waves, the seaweed, the gap, and to the shore.
The two lay on the beach, exhausted.
Robert felt the hot sun baking down and the firm sand pushing up.
They pressed him between them, wrapped him in a warm blanket, and all was good with the world again.
He listened to the waves gently lapping against the shore.
What were they saying?
We're sorry, we're sorry, we're sorry?
Or?
Come again.
We want you.
We want you.
We want you.
But he was on solid ground now. He could ignore the waves. Besides, he had another problem to deal with.
Kelly's hand reached out and took Robert's.
You're a big baby, but you're my big baby.
Robert was rotating and tapping his thumb and forefinger against each other.
Kelly raised onto her elbow.
So, what do you want to tell me?
Robert looked at her.
Kelly glanced at Robert's hand.
Whenever you do that thing with your fingers, I know you're thinking something.
Robert shook his hand.
Nervous habit, I guess. It started when I was learning to paint. I would twirl a brush in my fingers when I was trying to figure out where to dab some paint. Now I just do it when.
When you're trying to figure something out?
Yeah.
Kelly picked up a pebble from the beach and tossed it at Robert.
So?
Robert watched a plane heading for O'Hare.
Kelly, I've wanted to talk to you.
Yeah, I got that.
Robert glanced at Kelly, then down at his hands.
I've been thinking of leaving.
Kelly sat up and pitched another pebble at Robert.
So, why don't you take me with you?
Robert glanced at Kelly.
Would you?
Kelly dribbled sand between her fingers and onto the beach, then flattened the little mound.
No.
I suppose not.
Sam would never let me go.
No.
I suppose not.
So, I suppose that settles it.
You can't go.
Robert looked at Kelly.
Leaving you will be the hardest part.
Kelly stared out at the lake.
It's funny.
You've been chasing me since we met, and now I'm chasing you.
Did you hear me this morning say I love you?
Yeah.
I did.
Kelly plinked another pebble at Robert's head.
You didn't respond?
Robert tried to laugh.
I was drowning.
You're running again, this time from me.
Can I say it's me and not you?
You can say it, but that's pretty trite.
You better do better than that, pal.
I was talking with Manny.
Kelly nodded.
Oh. So that's it.
Manny.
He's given me some things to think about.
You can't believe everything he says.
Oh, I don't know.
He had me pegged pretty well.
Did he talk about me?
No.
Not really.
What did he say about me?
Nothing, really.
Robert, remember, you promised you would always tell me the truth.
What did he tell you?
He said he thought you were an interesting girl.
Shit.
You know you can't believe anything he says.
You know that.
Right?
Sure.
He lost his license.
Yeah, I know.
Robert sat up.
We talked about me.
My background.
How it affects my relationships.
Why, once upon a time, I left someone who loved me, and why I'm interested.
Robert glanced at Kelly, in you.
An interesting girl?
Yeah.
Kelly plinked another pebble at Robert's head, this time taking better aim.
Are you afraid of me?
Robert laughed, Only when you take me swimming. Kelly laughed too. Well, I won't do that very often. I don't want you to be afraid of me. Kelly reached over and brushed sand off Robert's arm. Well, maybe a little afraid would be good. Then she kissed his shoulder. What can I do to get you to stay? I screwed up my last relationship, and I hurt someone really bad. I'll have to pay for that. I don't want to ever do that again. That didn't answer my question. So what else did Manny tell you other than that I'm interesting? To stay away from you. Yeah. He'd say that. Do you believe him, what he told you about me? No, no, oh, okay. I don't know. It's all jumbled up in my head. When Manny talked about you, he was saying one thing, but I was picturing something else, a forgotten little girl, alone, rejected by her parents. You just wanted to be happy. And I was abandoned too. We're two lost children searching to find some reason for all of it, some happiness. Maybe that's with each other. I don't know. If I knew you better. We've been together almost every day for 5 months, and you don't know me? You tell me these fantastic stories. I know they're not true, and I don't care. But you tell me nothing about you, about what's inside of you. Kelly, let me in. You wouldn't want to see in. How can we have any kind of a relationship if you don't talk to me? Who are you? Kelly took Robert's hand. Common, it's hot out here. Let's go up to the house. Chapter 15. My birthday present. Kelly and Robert left the beach and strolled to the mansion. They stopped on the patio. Elaine and Sam are gone for the day, so's the housekeeper. We'd be alone. Do you want to come in? Kelly asked. Yes, he did. Kelly took Robert up the stairs to the second floor. Two corridors led off, one to the left, one to the right. Kelly led them down the one on the left. They passed several shut doors. The only light in the hallway was from windows near the stairs behind them. What's in there? Robert asked as they walked by one of the doors. A bathroom. Robert tried the next door. The handle wouldn't turn. Sam has a bunch of stuff in there. We keep it locked, Kelly advised. The next door, at the end of the hallway, was also closed. Kelly opened it. I don't think you've seen my room. Robert's eyes had adjusted to the hallway's dimness, but as he stepped into Kelly's room, it was too dark to see inside. Kelly flipped a wall switch, and two lights went on. One was from a lamp next to a desk at the back of the room, the other from a lamp on a bedside table to Robert's left. There were no girly posters on the wall, no disheveled clothing on chairs or the bed, no teddy bears or dolls lying about the floor, nothing to show that a girl lived here. There were no decorative touches, no vases with fake flowers, not even a throw rug on the wood floor, nothing to show anyone cared about who lived here. He tried to think of something diplomatic to say. Geez, your room has no windows. He failed. Well, I suppose I'm used to that. Besides, I don't spend much time here anymore. Robert's voice became louder. How did you end up with this room? There have to be better bedrooms in the house. This was a storage room over the garage before Elaine and I moved in with Sam. So, why did they put you in here? Kelly shrugged. It's the farthest room from theirs. Robert walked to the table next to the bed. At the front were two candles in red glass holders. Robert recognized them from when he was a Catholic as votive candles. Candles that are burned for the dead. Behind them were photographs in frames. So, what are these? Oh, pictures of pets and things. I thought you said you don't have any pets. Not anymore. That one's a cockatoo. It was my mom's favorite. Its name was Bertie. Robert pointed to another photograph. What about the dog? That's Limestone. Sam loved that dog. Probably the only thing he's ever loved. I guess it reminded him of himself. Big, bully, aggressive? Yes. Bark worse than its bite? No. You'd never hear it coming before it tore you apart. Behind the others was a photo of a girl. Who's that? An old babysitter. I can't remember her name. It was a long time ago. Robert picked up one of the photos. This is of you.
Yeah, a selfie. Janie said I should have a picture of us for my collection, but she ducked just as I snapped it. She said she decided she didn't want her picture taken.
Robert roamed to the back of the room and picked up a paperback book from the desk.
Lolita. Interesting book for a girl to have.
Someone gave it to me. They thought I might like it.
Did you?
Still studying it.
It's challenging to read.
Because it's about a young girl being sexually victimized by an older man?
No.
I thought it was about a precocious girl who seduced men.
Kelly cocked her head and smiled.
The power that chick had over that old man.
Robert dropped the book on the desk and laughed.
Kinda like you have over me?
Kelly kept her smile.
Kinda.
More than kinda, Robert thought, and felt warm with that thought.
He looked at Kelly's dingy room.
I see why you don't spend much time here, it's so gloomy, and you can't even see outside.
Kelly wandered toward the front of the bedroom, near her bed.
Oh, I used to spend more than enough time here. When I was little, whenever I was bad, which was quite often, Elaine or Sam made me stay in here as punishment.
Robert joined Kelly near the bed.
I know about timeouts. My dad would make me stand in a corner for half an hour sometimes.
Mine were good for 2 or 3 days.
What, they locked you up 2 or 3 days?
Yeah.
You mean hours, right?
No.
Days.
They'd have the housekeeper bring me food.
Mary.
You remember Mary?
Yeah.
I remember Mary. She took care of me. There's the bathroom a couple of doors down the hallway. I was allowed to use that. But that was it.
Sometimes, when Sam and Elaine were gone, Mary would let me wander around the house.
But we had to be careful.
Sam would have fired her if he ever found out.
I felt so alone.
Kelly walked over to the bedroom door and shut it.
I remember sitting by this door and just crying.
I'd pretend that a burglar would come into the house.
When I was younger, he would come in and try to rescue me and take me away.
Kelly pressed her back against the door.
Sometimes, I'd imagine he would block the door so Sam couldn't get in. I'd tell my burglar what they did to me. That I wished they were dead. He said he'd do it for me.
You're a little kid wishing your parents were dead?
Sam, I wanted Sam dead. It would be the only way I could ever get away from him. And I was 8 years old.
That's when my mother married him.
And that's how long I've wanted him dead.
That's sad.
You're imagining someone being killed.
Not someone.
I told you.
I want Sam dead.
Besides, everyone fantasizes. It's a way to escape, to make living a little more bearable. It was the only way I could deal with my time with Sam.
Kelly stepped closer to Robert.
My fantasies were not always about killing. As I got older, they became sexual.
He would force himself on me.
You don't mean Sam, right?
No.
The burglar, silly.
So now we're talking about rape?
No.
I don't think I'd call it that.
I would be in my room.
Then I'd hear a noise downstairs, someone coming up the stairs.
I'd huddle down in my bed.
I hope he doesn't come in here.
Then the doorknob would turn, and he'd open the door.
Oh, please, Mr. Burglar, don't hurt me.
He'd take hold of me and lay me out on my bed.
I knew he was too strong for me, so I didn't fight.
He'd make me naked.
Kelly put her lips next to Robert's ear.
Then, he would whisper.
It's okay, I'm not going to hurt you.
He would fondle me.
Then whisper again, after you, it will be my turn.
Kelly's hand was rubbing up and down Robert's arm.
He'd caress and kiss my breasts, his hands would roam down until his fingers found me.
I resisted the sensations at first. I didn't want it to become his turn.
But he would keep at me, leisurely, tenderly, teasing me.
I couldn't stop it.
You have to understand.
I tried.
I couldn't help myself.
Then it became his turn.
He was not fully hard when he'd enter me.
But I could feel him grow as he moved back and forth inside.
Kelly stiffened her body and rubbed it against Robert's.
I'd clench my body and hold still, trying to give him no pleasure. No. 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 I'd cry. But as he kept thrusting inside of me, I'd respond, panting, trembling, I'd lose control. My hips would buck, he'd groan, and we'd climax together. Kelly put her hand on Robert's warm cheek. I dreamed a lot about my burglar. Sometimes I handcuffed myself to my bed. Only one arm, of course, and pretend my burglar would come in and play with me and make love to me. Those are my favorite fantasies. Kelly put both her palms on Robert's chest. And no, Robert. Not rape me. Not screw me. Make love to me. Kelly, that's exactly rape. When a girl says no, that's it. No matter when. It stops. No questions. Period. Robert, your face is red, and you have a hard-on. Help me understand. You have a naked girl tied up and helpless, you can do anything you want to her, and you wouldn't take advantage? My condition is because you're standing 3 inches from me in your white bikini, not because that's what I would want to do. Besides, fantasy is one thing. It's not so gratifying in real life. No. I wouldn't do that to a girl. You think you have that much control? I know I do. Kelly moved away from Robert and leaned against the wall. Ultimately, it wasn't rape or whatever you want to call it. It was love. He'd kill Sam for me and then he and I would get to stay here and have sex all day long. Kind of a unique definition of love. Well, anyway, he doesn't come around much anymore. Why not? Janie doesn't like him. Kelly paused, you wanted to see in. She squinted up at Robert. So, what do you think? Let me get this straight. Your make-believe girlfriend doesn't like your fantasy burglar. Kelly's head jerked back. I told you, you wouldn't want to see in. This is me with all my blemishes. Her eyes got wet, take a good look. Robert shook his head at being an idiot again, then took Kelly's head in his hands and kissed her lips. You're a beautiful flower in a very complicated flower pot. He kissed her again. I am looking, and I think I love you. Kelly nodded, sniffled, and wiped her nose with the back of her hand. Then her face lit up with her brightest, bestest smile. Listen, this should be a happy day. It's my 21st birthday. Oh, wow. Happy birthday. Kelly curtsied. Thank you, sir. Did your parents, sorry I meant your mom and Sam, get you something? No, they forgot. I'm sorry. It's okay. I'm used to it. If I'd have known, I would have gotten you a present. I think you're about two. What? You? Kelly reached down and patted the front of Robert's pants. Do you think I can tempt you to stay with a little sex? Sex is always good. We can work with that. Robert's hands moved to the back of Kelly's head and caressed her hair with the same tempo she was massaging his pants. Let's make love. Could we wait? I'm not ready for that yet. I'm sorry. Robert dropped his arms to his side. So, your burglar gets to have you, but not me? Kelly kept stroking Robert, coaxing him to grow until he was straining against his pants. Don't you like the way I took care of you before? I just want more for us. Do you want me to stop? Robert lowered his head and nuzzled Kelly's neck. Kelly grinned, I didn't think so. She unzipped Robert's pants and let them drop to the floor. Then took hold of his cock, and stroked him until his legs were shaking, and he groaned and climaxed. Robert was regaining his breathing when Kelly kissed his cheek. I can bloom for you if you give me a little more time. I need to work through some things. Do you understand? Robert nodded. Kelly continued to hold on to Robert. You know what they say when someone rescues another from the sea? It was Lake Michigan. Same thing. Robert smiled. Okay. No. What do they say? Whoever is rescued belongs to their rescuer. You belong to me now. Kelly let go of Robert's cock and wrapped her arms around his neck. You're a big baby. But you're my big baby? Give me a little time. Stay with me. Robert nodded. Chapter 16. Travis. Robert was in a mellow mood. In the days after Kelly's birthday, she had bloomed for him. Opening up, exposing the delicate flower beneath the hard sepal where she usually hid. And love. They had both used the word. Kelly directly, he in his more guarded fashion. But it was out there now. A promise. A commitment to each other. To care for the other. To put the other's needs above one's own. To protect. Robert was in the studio finishing work on a painting. Kelly came over. She wandered around, picking something up, putting it down, going on to something else. A delicate, bruised blossom. She had been silent for some time. Kelly was never silent. Robert wondered what was up. Kelly was looking down at something on a table across the room. Do you remember that party I had last fall? He did. Rejection is hard to forget. I remember. I've always wondered why you invited me. Kelly walked over to Robert. You were all alone. I felt sorry for you. I hoped you might make some friends. But you were such a clod. Yeah, I know. Your friends put me off. I wasn't myself. Well, they are jerks. There was a girl there I've wondered about. Oh. Who? Her name is Sydney. How do you know her? Honestly, I don't think I know anyone by that name. She was at your party. Yeah, well, that sometimes gets out of control. Someone I invite, invites someone, who invites someone. Do you want to see if I can find out more about her for you? No. No, I've just been wondering why she was there. Kelly put her hands on Robert's chest and picked at a button on his shirt. So, what did you think of Travis? Robert remembered him very well. The guy with you at the party? Yeah, that one. I thought he was an arrogant, self-centered, asshole jerk. Did I leave anything out? Kelly glanced up at Robert. How about, rapist? Then she returned to studying the button. Robert felt nauseous, even as the words were still clanging around in his head. He played it over, trying to pluck meaning out of the noise. What do you say when someone tells you some terrible thing? What can you say? What can possibly help? What connects with that person to share their pain? Robert didn't know. He was waiting for the noise to go away. All he could think of was, where? When? How? Kelly had already answered what and who. Kelly shook her head. Those were too many questions. Then Robert did better. Do you want to talk about it? I wish you had stayed that night. I was trying to break up with him. It didn't look like it. That was mean. Robert regretted those words as they were leaving his mouth. The sting of rejection had festered inside him since the party. And now, it had just burst out. What the hell are you thinking? Kelly bit her lip. I had wanted to tell him. After you walked away, I figured that was a good time. I told him you and I were dating and that you were my new boyfriend. Robert wanted to get his last remark behind them as quickly as possible. He massaged Kelly's shoulder. What did he say to that? He laughed. That candy ass? You'd pick him over me? He said we needed to talk about it. He took me out by the pool. No one was out there. They were all inside drinking. If you had been looking out your window, you would have seen us. Robert opened his mouth to respond, but Kelly was getting wound up. We argued. We were so loud. I'm surprised you didn't hear us. He grabbed my arm and pulled me toward the back of the patio. What are you doing? Where are you taking me? His hand was gripping me so hard it hurt. I was afraid. I begged him. Let's go back to the party. He said he needed a goodbye present, and I was it. Kelly looked down. We'd gone pretty far in the past, but we never went all the way, never did it. Kelly glanced up at Robert and sobbed. I was a virgin. He took me to those bushes behind the gazebo, held me down, and he raped me. If you had heard us, if you had come out, you could have stopped him. Robert had been massaging Kelly's shoulder. Now he stopped. Kelly, after I left the party, I sat in the gazebo. I was right there. I didn't hear or see anything. When did this happen? After everyone left. I thought you said you asked him to take you back to the party.
What party if everyone had already left?
Maybe I said, let's go back into the house, instead of let's go back to the party. That was a very traumatic night for me.
What difference does it make?
I just knew I didn't want to be out there with him.
It happened sometime that night.
Kelly, I sat in the gazebo all night. I didn't see that anything happened.
Robert, are you doubting me?
Why don't you say you're sorry?
I didn't do anything.
I know you didn't.
That's what we're talking about.
You did nothing.
You didn't stop him.
You didn't rescue me.
How could I?
I didn't know it was happening.
Well, you should have.
Robert threw up his hands.
Kelly, rape is a terrible thing.
But saying someone raped you and they didn't is terrible too.
Well, duh.
Kelly walked to the table and leaned against it.
Wait a minute.
You don't believe me?
You know how much I hate liars.
Robert stepped up to Kelly.
The party was months ago.
Why did you wait?
Why are you just telling me now?
Kelly's eyes were wet.
I didn't trust you.
I didn't trust anyone to talk to about this.
I thought you and I got closer after my birthday.
I opened myself up to you.
I told you that I loved you.
I hoped you cared for me.
Robert put his arms on Kelly's shoulders.
I do care for you.
You said you thought you loved me too.
Kelly was sobbing.
I have no one else.
Robert took Kelly in his arms.
I'm so sorry for what happened to you.
I wish there was something I could do.
Kelly leaned back, wiped the tears from her eyes, and studied Robert.
Avenge me.
Avenge you?
You're my boyfriend.
You need to avenge me.
Kelly, what are you talking about?
Why don't you use your gun and shoot him?
You want me to shoot Travis?
I want him dead.
It's awful what he did.
It's ugly, but...
Are you going to tell me you don't have a gun?
I have a gun.
But I can't believe you'd want me to shoot someone.
How can you expect me to do that?
It's easy.
You walk up to him, point it at him, and pull the trigger.
Robert went back to his easel, picked up a paintbrush, and twirled it with his fingers.
That gun could be traced to me.
It's even had ballistics tests done.
The police would get the records.
Why is that?
Listen.
I'm not going to shoot Travis.
Fine.
Shooting would be too easy on him anyway.
It would just put him out of his misery, like shooting a lousy dog.
He should suffer.
Kelly folded her arms across her chest.
You need to get a knife and cut his balls off.
Wait a minute, you just dropped some stuff on me.
You've been raped, and now you want me to castrate the rapist.
Can we talk about this?
Kelly put her hands on the table and leaned back.
Tell me how he squealed and cried after you cut off his balls.
I want it here.
Kelly, I can't believe you're saying this.
Robert, I can't believe you're not hearing me.
I want him punished.
What you want is revenge.
You need to beat him up.
He's a hell of a lot bigger than me and probably captain of his rugby team.
He'd beat the crap out of me.
Kelly crept toward Robert.
Sneak up from behind him and hit him with a baseball bat.
When will I ever find him alone where I can sneak up on him and hit him with anything?
Come on, Kelly, you're not making sense.
He needs to be punished.
You should call the police.
No, Sam wouldn't like that.
He takes care of things his way.
He never involves the police.
So tell Sam.
I can't.
He and Travis's family do business together.
That could cause problems between us.
Between your family and Travis's?
No, between Sam and me.
You think he'd put Travis's family over you?
I don't want to think about it.
It's complicated.
What will you do to avenge me?
Robert put the paintbrush on his easel.
I'm angry as hell at what he did to you.
Thanks a lot.
That's about as useful as someone saying, I'll pray for you.
Absolve me from my inaction, Father, for I have prayed.
Kelly picked up the brush.
What are you going to do?
I don't know.
I can't think of anything I can do.
You're not going to do anything, are you?
What can I do?
You're right.
Kelly tossed the paintbrush against the easel.
Forget it. You're impotent. There's nothing you can do.
Kelly, that's not fair. I care for you. I'd do anything for you.
Kelly moved close to Robert, face to face.
Oh, well, let's get this straight. Will you kill Travis because he raped me?
We know the answer to that one, no.
So, how about if he was about to rape me?
You know, he's pulling me out of the party, and I'm screaming for help.
I'd call the police.
I'd get help.
That's so weak.
Let's try this.
We're behind the gazebo.
He's holding me down, pulling my pants off.
What would you do then?
I wouldn't let him do that to you.
Would you kill him then?
I would do whatever it took to stop him.
But would you kill him?
Yes.
Chapter 17. We are all just toilet paper. Robert spent a good part of the day pacing, then sitting at the table by the window staring at the patio and the gazebo, then still more pacing. Yesterday Kelly had told him Travis had raped her. In the bushes behind the gazebo, right over there. His stomach hurt. He was furious with Travis, even if it wasn't true.
But what if it was?
Robert thought about that night he sat alone in the gazebo. He would have heard something, surely he would have.
But what if he had dozed?
Slept through Kelly's rape.
How awful.
Kelly being raped within feet of him, and he slept through it, as useless as a mouse. He would have killed Travis then. He wanted to now, even if it wasn't true.
But if it was?
No one will ever hurt Kelly again.
God watches over vows.
His mother's voice.
You can't break a vow.
What do you know of vows, mother?
Here's one at you.
No one
will ever
hurt
Kelly
again.
Kelly stormed in. She had on the same dress as the day before.
My mother's such a bitch. When she wakes up in a bad mood, she thinks it's her job to make sure everyone else has a bad day as well. She just makes me feel like shit.
Okay.
Robert was used to Kelly complaining about her mother. She's so angry. She's like a plastic bag full of.
Kelly fought for a word, crap.
It's full to the breaking point and one little nip at the corner, and it all breaks and comes gushing out.
I think you sometimes help with that nip.
Kelly smirked.
I carry the scissors.
So, what was it this time?
I told her she needed to recycle her empty wine bottles.
At least get them into the recycling bin, and I'd take care of it from there.
Okay.
So what's the big deal with that?
She refused to do it. She says recycling is another conspiracy the Democrats have come up with.
You got into her over that?
That, and global warming, and martial law is about to be declared, and it's about time, and we need to clean out the swamp in Washington.
We get into it over everything.
Do you ever feel like shit, like life is meaningless, that there's no purpose to it?
Robert remembered the cold, rainy day he sat in the gazebo with the gun in his hand.
Yeah.
But it gets better.
That's a worn-out cliche everyone says.
Why should it get better?
What if it doesn't?
What if?
What if?
Kelly shook her head and stretched out her arms.
What if this is all there is?
Robert tried to talk about what he felt was really upsetting Kelly.
I can't imagine how awful it was to go through what Travis did to you.
I appreciate that was painful for you to tell me about him.
I didn't handle that very well.
I'm sorry.
We ended up deciding you were impotent.
Robert's face grew hot.
I thought we ended up deciding your revenge ideas were screwball.
He regretted that remark.
Sorry, that didn't come out very well.
Calling a guy impotent is a red flag.
Shit, you're sorry about everything.
You're just sorry.
You think it's all about Travis?
You don't know anything about my life.
You don't have to live with Sam.
You weren't brought up by my mother.
You're not stuck here in a dead-end life.
So get out of it.
Get a job, earn some money, and move out.
Sam won't let me get a job.
He said it would make him look bad, like he couldn't support me.
Go to college.
I hated school.
It's so boring.
Besides, Sam says I'm too dumb.
That's okay.
Let him think that.
He'll find out.
Kelly, remember the story. The wonderful story about the complicated, fragile, young girl. Your story. It has the ups and downs of life. The good moments and the extraordinary. And yeah, the bad. That's all part of it. Some story. Sam and my mother have scrawled all over it. This isn't about them. It's you. There is a better life out there. You just have to go find it. Discover what you're meant to do and go do it. That's another one of those dumb things people say. What if what you're meant to do, the real reason you're here, isn't all that great? What if you were just sheet number 838 in the role? What are you talking about? What role? You start out in a giant vat of warm goo. You're in a papermaking factory. You could be anything. A sheet of paper in a medical textbook, so someone could learn how to save another's life. A napkin, wrapped around a warm donut. A Valentine's Day card for a sweetheart. You end up in a roll of toilet paper, sheet number 838. After a while, you get used to that. Maybe you'd be used to dab some lipstick from a lady's lip, you think. Perhaps to wipe a tear from a lover's cheek. Then a big, fat person sits down next to you. Her ass cheeks hang over the toilet seat, and she, well, she does her thing. Then she starts pulling sheets off the roll, 810, 11, 12, you knew them. Wipe, wipe. Oh no, what's this? You think? She pulls again. Wipe, wipe. Your life starts to unwind. It's out of control. Wipe, wipe. This can't be it. Surely there's something more. Sheets 820, 821, 822. Wipe, wipe. I didn't think this was how it was supposed to be. Your world is spinning. More sheets. Wipe, wipe. You're next. No. What? Wait. I'm not ready yet. I thought I'd have more. Wipe. Congratulations, pal. You just fulfilled your destiny. Robert groaned. Okay. Thanks for that. I was in a good mood. So descriptive. And so gross. Kelly smirked. Two things you can't do without, coffee and toilet paper. When things got too complicated for me where I lived, I left. Why don't you leave? Sam's told me if I ever did, he'd cut me off without a dime. Okay, so he does. So what? At least you'd be free. Is freedom so important? I gave up love for it. Freedom to do what? To do my art. To make something meaningful. Something I will be remembered for. You're chasing after dreams like that. Don Quixote. You're thinking of Don Quixote. I don't need you to tell me what I think. You think you're so much smarter than me. You're not free. Look at you. Living off the tit of Sam Gallo. You let Sam take advantage of you. You took that terrible deal from him. Work for free? What a dummy. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were there. As I remember it, he threatened to break my fingers, sue me, and or kick my ass for taking pictures of you. Pictures, which by the way, you knew I was taking. And why you told him about those, I'll never understand. You must not remember very well. He had guessed it was me. He came at me and threw the pictures in my face. What did you want me to do? Kelly had angry tears in her eyes. I'm afraid of him too. Robert put up his arms. Okay. Okay. Kelly sneered at him. You're a C person. No, I'm better than that. No, you're a C person. That's okay. Most people are. They're satisfied with that. Your problem is you think you're an A. But really, you're not. You're just a C. In fact, I bet you got D's in school. You're a person. That's subpar, pal. You spend your days in a dark hole you call a studio, and Sam gets all your money. You can't afford to go anywhere else. You're stuck here too. Well, at least my basic needs are met. Food, clothing, shelter? Breathing's good. That, and fingers I can still use.
Yeah.
Well, with Sam, at least being able to breathe is A+. I hate it here too, but I owe Sam. I don't have a choice. You sold out. You make pornographic pictures for a porn dealer that dirty old men like Sam can drool over. You're a loser. I'm done arguing with you.
No, you're not.
You're not done until I'm done.
Why are we arguing?
You came here looking for a fight. All I'm saying is you have choices. You're free to set your own life.
Why do you keep harping on freedom?
I didn't realize I keep harping.
But okay, let's talk about that.
You're free to make love to me, why don't you?
Dummy, because I'm free to say no.
That's not it, and you know it.
How about, you're not very attractive, and I don't want to?
That's not what's going on here.
There's so much pain inside of you.
You tell me about some of it.
Then you put up a wall.
Kelly started breathing harder.
You're the one with the rules.
Rule 1, keep this professional.
I've changed my mind.
It's a good rule, pal.
Why are you throwing that back in my face?
You know how I feel about you.
I know what you say.
My burglar didn't need to talk.
He showed me.
You know I'd never force myself on you.
Well, maybe sometimes that's what a girl wants.
Rape?
No, to be so desirable to a man, he wants her so bad, he loses control.
I'm not like your burglar.
Well, maybe you should be.
To force you?
To love me.
I do love you.
How can you not see that?
And yet, you keep me on a pedestal and take pictures of me.
Robert stepped toward Kelly.
I'll show you I love you.
He forced his mouth on Kelly's, his hand squeezed her breast.
Kelly pulled back.
Screw you.
Now I'm done.
Robert grabbed her,
no. We need to get this taken care of.
He locked his arms around her, holding Kelly as she struggled to get loose.
I'm not going to let you go until we at least talk about this.
Kelly stopped resisting.
Her breathing quieted.
She looked down, nodded, pushed herself away, and went to the door to leave.
Then she turned and came at him like a snake on the attack.
Her body swinging, throwing off coils, head dead on target, her unblinking eyes peering directly at him.
A sneer on her face.
She was on him in an instant.
Touch me again, and I'll slit your throat.
Kelly left Robert and went home.
She wandered through the house.
She seemed to recall being annoyed with Robert, for what she couldn't remember.
Oh well.
Some silly thing.
Sam and Elaine were out for the evening.
The housekeeper had left as well.
She was alone.
She liked that.
It got dark.
She strode through the house and closed the blinds and shutters, checked that every door was locked, and turned on the alarms.
Then she climbed the stairs to the room at the end of the hall.
Robert had thought it odd there were no windows.
She liked that there were no windows, and only one door.
She locked the door behind her.
No thing could get to her here when she locked that door.
She went to the bedstand and studied the photographs.
One was of Janie.
It was behind the others.
She remembered Janie.
She certainly did.
Very well.
Very well indeed.
Janie had slipped and got hit by a train.
Silly Janie.
She picked up the picture of Bertie.
Sweet Bertie.
Sweet,
cawing, cackling, crackling, noisy Bertie.
Silly Bertie.
There was a recent photo of Limestone.
Don't look at me like that.
You never liked me, you silly dog. And I never liked you.
You couldn't tell the difference between good meat and bad meat.
Silly dog.
Silly, silly dog.
She opened the drawer, took out a book of matches, and lit one of the candles that were in front of the photos.
When she was little, her mother had taken her to church.
Put a quarter into the slot and light a candle.
For each candle, a soul can leave purgatory and go to heaven.
When her mother turned her back, she put the candle in her pocket.
Silly soul.
The next week she stole another candle.
Silly, silly soul.
She knelt in front of the bedstand and rested her arms on it, the pictures flickering in the candlelight.
Perhaps she fell asleep.
She wanted a bath.
That would mean having to leave her room. That should be okay, she thought. She lit the other candle, unlocked her door, and went down the hall to the bathroom. She closed and locked the bathroom door behind her. She didn't turn on a light and put the candle and her phone on the sink. She was careful to keep her phone away from water. She used to take it with her while she bathed, but one time she dropped it, and Sam had to buy her a new one. He was not happy about that. Oh no, he certainly wasn't. But he liked to keep track of where she was. He had told her she could never leave the house without the phone. She turned on the water and undressed as the tub filled. The candle, shining through the glass, cast a crimson glow over her bathroom. A hot bath was one of her favorite things to do. Winter or summer, it didn't matter. She would sink into the hot water and let everything slip away. It was a large, deep tub. She could lie in it with only her head above water. She liked to hold her breath and put her head under the water. From here, she could hear the mechanisms of the house. A clang in the pipes when the hot water heater turned on. A hollow thump when the air conditioner in the summer or the furnace in the winter clicked in. She could tell when the housekeeper turned on the kitchen sink, or when Sam flushed the toilet in his bathroom. The pipes running through the house were its veins, and the tub its heart. She slid her head underwater. If she held really still, she could hear other things besides the house. She could hear the gurgling in her stomach. She could hear the beating of her heart. Once, she had heard another heart. Faster than hers. It was faint. She concentrated on its pulse. Here I am. Here I am. Here I am. Later she thought she had imagined it. But the next time she took a bath, she could hear its plea. Love me. Love me. Love me. She told her mother about that. In her last bath before being taken away, she listened to the heart, stronger now. Forget me not. Forget me not. Forget me, not. I won't, she promised. Kelly raised her head above the water. The candle flickered as if a current of air had crossed over it. Kelly sat up, confused. She hadn't heard the air conditioner turn on. She called softly. Janie? She stared into the water. A small string-like object was floating up from between her legs. A curious thing. Where did it come from? It floated to the surface. Perhaps an inch or so long, slightly curled. A curious thing indeed. It reminded her of a small, overcooked noodle. She tried to pick it up, but her fingers pressing together compressed the water and pushed it away. She tried several more times without success. Finally, she cupped her palm under it and carefully brought her hand up, letting the water escape through her fingers. The thing lay limp in her hand. She flipped her wrist to shake it off into the room. It stayed stuck. She tried a couple more times, but it remained stubbornly fixed. Then she picked it up with the fingers from her other hand and flicked it. It landed on the edge of the tub. It was a sickly-looking thing. Through its thin, pale membrane, she could make out a design, blue veins. Well? She thought. After my bath, I'll get some toilet paper and throw it away. She looked closer. It had a face, then it moved. Kelly tumbled back, slipping under the water, the tub squeaking, the water sloshing. The thing started slithering and squirming, moving faster until it fell into the tub. Kelly jumped up, bathwater cascading off her. Get me out of here. She felt a rumbling in her stomach and looked down. Liquids and worms were spewing out of her, thundering against the water that was churning like a witch's cauldron from the wriggling, writhing worms. They crawled up her legs, stomach, her chest, prodding, poking, busily burrowing, arms flailing, ripping, blood flowing. They reached her head, chomping, chewing, crunching. That's when Kelly screamed. Robert heard the pat, pat, pat of a hand feeling its way around the foot of his bed. His phone rang. He saw it was Kelly. Hello? There was no answer. Hello? He heard arguing in the background. He recognized Kelly's voice, but not the others. Was it Elaine? Was Kelly fighting with her mother? Robert couldn't tell. Hello? Was it the voice that wanted to slit his throat? Sounded like it. Hello? Anyone there? The fight escalated, becoming brutal. Something crashing. Hello? Can anyone hear me? Hello? Something breaking. Hello? Hello? Something tearing, something ripping. Hello? A crunch. Then a scream. The terror of a soul plunging into hell, then dead. Robert called the police. Chapter 18. Elaine comes over. Scene 1. Can I get dressed? Robert felt cold when he got out of bed. He realized he had been sweating, and he and his sheets were damp. Last night had not been a good night for Robert's sleep, and now it was mid-morning. He didn't put on any clothes, and shuffled to the table by the window, still in his underwear, and tried to wake up. He thought about finding the energy to make a cup of coffee and stared at his phone. Calling the police was a big deal. Was that the right thing to do? Did I overreact? What about Kelly? Is Kelly okay? What happened to her? Elaine barged in. Does no one knock? Mrs. Gallo. Elaine came at Robert without even slowing down to shut the door. What would ever cause you to call the police on us? How dare you interfere in our personal lives? Robert's hands instinctively covered his crotch. Give me a minute to put some clothes on. Never mind, this won't take long. What possessed you? How's Kelly? I asked you a question. Do you realize what problems you caused with that call? I'm sorry. Kelly's phone must have pocket-dialed me. Robert held up his phone as if that was proof of what he was saying. It also put something between him and the angry Mrs. Gallo. I heard Kelly screaming. It sounded like someone was trying to kill her. I didn't know what else to do. Is Kelly okay? Kelly was home alone last night. No one else was there. No one was trying to kill her. But I heard two voices. One I could tell was Kelly, but I didn't recognize the other. Someone was overpowering her, and she was fighting back like crazy. This family doesn't call the police for help. Not ever. I'm sorry. I panicked. I know I heard another person in there. I wanted to protect Kelly. Where is she? Mr. Gallo and I don't appreciate your sticking your nose in our family's affairs. Robert put his phone back on the table. No, ma'am, but I was worried about Kelly. Have the police contacted you? No. Why would the police call me? What's happened to Kelly? They're going to talk to you since you're the one who called them. They will have questions for you. The police take every opportunity they can to pry into Mr. Gallo's business. I'm going to tell you what to tell them. Before you tell me anything else, tell me what happened to Kelly. Mr. Gallo and I are taking care of Kelly. It's none of your business. It is my business. I care about Kelly. I know that. You have no idea what you know. You, Elaine paused and took a breath as Robert stood up. I'm not ever going to let Kelly get hurt. Robert realized he was standing with nothing on but his underpants and sat down, again. Who do you think you are to say that to me? She's my daughter. I take care of her. I'm the one that protects her. Robert gritted his teeth. He didn't say what he wanted to. Instead, he took a breath, then said, I'm not anyone. I'm just worried about Kelly. I appreciate there are things going on inside of her. If I knew, maybe I could help. Mr. Gallo likes to keep things private. I can do that. I don't care about Mr. Gallo or his business, just Kelly. Please. Elaine didn't respond. There's plenty I do know about Mr. Gallo's business, starting with what goes on in the back rooms of the shop. You're treading in dangerous water there, Robert. I don't care. I've kinda gotten used to that. Tell me about Kelly, or... Robert picked up his phone. Elaine crossed her arms. That's extortion. Robert put his phone back on the table and looked at Elaine. No. It's blackmail. Elaine studied Robert, then nodded and leaned against the table. Kelly has had issues ever since she was a little girl. She would go into bouts of depression. Hide in her room for days at a time. She'd sit against the door, so I couldn't get in. She invented characters. I could hear her talking to make-believe friends. It would sound like someone else, but it was just Kelly changing her voice. Robert opened his mouth and started to talk, but Elaine held up her hand. "This is not easy for me." She looked at Robert. "So keep your mouth shut." Robert nodded. Elaine went to the front door, closed it, then turned to Robert and lowered her voice. "When she was 14, she attempted suicide." Elaine held up her hand in her continuing warning to Robert to keep his mouth shut. "While she was at school, she bought drugs from someone there and overdosed. The school janitor found her passed out in a closet and called for emergency help." Robert's breath was sucked out of him. "Why would she attempt suicide? She was pregnant." Elaine walked back to the table. The authorities became involved. They insisted Kelly get treatment at a mental health institution. "We didn't have much choice. Mr. Gallo picked a facility in a different state. He hoped if her treatment wasn't local, there would be less chance of anything getting back here. He took her there himself." Elaine slid Robert's phone back and forth on the table. "When she came home, she wasn't pregnant anymore." Robert grabbed Elaine's wrist. "You got her an abortion? Look, she was 14 years old and unmarried. You could have helped her raise the baby. You certainly have enough money to do so. It would have been embarrassing." Elaine pulled her hand away from Robert. "Besides, they diagnosed her with what I think they called a split personality. She probably shouldn't have had a kid anyway." Robert spoke out. "Dissociative identity disorder? I took a psych class in college, that's what it's called now, dissociative identity disorder. Not split personality. Millions of people have mental disorders and make excellent parents. Kelly could." "Robert, remember who you're talking to. Did I ask for your opinion?" "No. Sorry, I blurt things out when I'm nervous." "Are you nervous now?" "No. I'm angry. But so, okay. Split personality is a good term. You realize it comes about from someone being abused during their childhood. What are you saying?" "Kelly was not molested. I know my daughter. I'm just telling you what I learned." "Well, I'm telling you she was not abused." Elaine pushed against the table as if trying to rearrange it. "When she came back from the institution, she started in again with her locking herself in her room and talking with her make-believe people routine. Kelly was a challenging child. When she went out of control, normal things didn't work with her. Mr. Gallo got cuffs to fix her down so she could struggle but not hurt herself. They didn't leave any marks. Sometimes he would use those on her." "Did he cuff her to her bed?" "I don't know. Mr. Gallo took care of all that. Since the authorities are involved again, we had to take some action. He's taken her back to the institution." "So, what happened? What did Kelly do?" "She and I got into a fight yesterday. We're always fighting. I don't even remember what it was about. It must have sent her over the edge. I don't know. You heard her last night. Her screaming. Are you going to make me spell it out for you?" Robert shook his head. Elaine nodded. "It's for a week. Mr. Gallo plans on staying there with Kelly and be in the counseling. He's concerned about what she might report, or what might come out. I'm surprised they let him participate that much. Her treatment's supposed to be confidential. Mr. Gallo has a forceful personality. He's hard to say no to. Besides, he has some kind of ownership interest with them." Elaine smoothed the hair on the back of her head. "So, you wanted to know about Kelly. Now, do you understand what I've been dealing with?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"So the rules are..."
"The rules?"
"Yes.
The rules.
Just two.
One?
What I've told you stays between you and me, understand?"
"Yes.
That includes the police." Elaine looked at Robert, who nodded his assent, and Mr. Gallo. "If he learned I told you this much, he would not be pleased. That would not go well for me, and assuredly not for you. Understand?"
"Yes."
"Two. Don't talk to Kelly about any of this. You are dealing with a very fragile girl. If you say the wrong thing, it could break her. She might, This may not be how they termed it in your psych class, but it's accurate, go off the deep end. Understand?
Yes, I understand.
Promise?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Good boy. Elaine stepped close to the stool Robert was sitting on and looked down at him.
I don't think anyone's called me ma'am for a while. Makes me feel ancient.
Do you think I'm old, Robert?
Robert looked up at Elaine.
Oh, no ma'am.
Elaine.
Who said you were allowed to call me Elaine?
It's Mrs. Gallo to you.
I'm sorry.
You don't use a person's first name unless they let you. That's only for people you are close to.
Understand?
Yes.
It's just that. Calling someone by their first name without permission is a sign of disrespect.
You got that, Robert?
Robert looked down.
Yes.
I got it.
It's just that when Kelly first introduced us, she introduced you as Elaine.
Kelly knows better.
She's always trying to get to me. Push my buttons, as the saying goes. Usually in public, when I can't discipline her. She likes to make my life miserable.
Elaine picked up Robert's phone and sat on the table, right in front of him, right where the phone used to be.
I guess I dropped in on you pretty unexpectedly.
That seems to be a family custom.
Elaine slid Robert's phone to the other side of the table, out of Robert's reach.
You're still in your underwear.
Can I just go get some clothes on?
So, do you spend a lot of time in your underwear around my daughter?
Mrs. Gallo?
Elaine hiked her skirt, baring her thighs.
It's a simple question.
She's here naked.
I wonder what you wear.
Well, I wear just regular clothes, I guess.
I try to imagine what you and my daughter do together all day.
We have rules that we follow.
Kelly follows rules?
We keep it entirely professional.
You're not sleeping with her?
No, ma'am.
That's amusing.
One of Kelly's problems is her promiscuity. She has sex with any boy she spends more than 10 minutes with.
Oh.
Well, I didn't know that.
Elaine snickered.
If you're not bedding her down, then maybe there's something wrong with you.
There's nothing wrong with me.
You sure?
Elaine leaned over, her face within kissing distance of Robert's.
Her perfume filled his nostrils.
Let's find out.
Her fingers found his crotch.
Robert jerked back on his stool, almost tipping over.
Elaine's fingers followed his crotch.
Relax, Robert, let's see what kind of a man you are.
Robert took hold of Elaine's wrist and tried to move it away, but Elaine tightened her arm, and her fingers continued to brush over Robert's underpants.
What about Mr. Gallo?
Aren't you afraid of him?
I am.
He's not here this week.
You better be afraid of me.
Why?
Mr. Gallo goes out on me all the time.
It seems he's good in bed with everyone but me.
Elaine pressed her hand against Robert's crotch.
With us, sex is as spontaneous as painting the house, and about as much fun.
Her tongue worked over Robert's neck.
But if another man even looks at me, he gets jealous.
Elaine's hand pushed harder against Robert.
He's had bad things done to men who try to be nice to me.
Robert held tighter to Elaine's moving hand.
Yeah, all the more reason I should stay away from you.
He'd never find out about us.
But, if we don't do this, I'll tell him you came on to me.
That would not go well for you.
I deny it.
Elaine sat back.
So, you think Mr. Gallo would believe an employee over his loving wife?
You realize it wouldn't matter.
He'd still do something to you, just in case.
Grab hold of the table and hang on.
Elaine waited while Robert complied.
Good boy. Now don't try to stop me this time.
Elaine leaned forward, and her hand went back to Robert's crotch, her mouth to his ear.
You can think of this as my getting even for his plundering, or as a horny old housewife needing a fix, but you might as well enjoy it because, like it or not, this is going to happen.
This is blackmail.
No, it's extortion.
Elaine stood up.
Now, go to the bedroom and let me see what I got.
Scene 2.
A little bit about Kelly. Robert walked into the center of his bedroom and turned to face Elaine.
Elaine stood at the doorway,
an amused look on her face. She flipped her hand up and down, directing Robert. He bent over and slid his underpants off and stood up. Elaine looked at Robert like she was trying to decide whether to spend money on a piece of art. Then she went close to him, "Good boy. Now me." She watched him as he removed her clothes. She got on the bed and motioned him to lie down next to her. Elaine led Robert's head with her hands to her neck, her breasts, then down further. She gripped Robert's head between her legs as he licked her. At first, Robert was just going through the mechanical motions, but as Elaine responded, her hips grinding into his face, Robert reacted too. He rocked on the bed, rubbing his cock against the sheet. After Elaine's orgasm, she pulled on his head, signaling, "Enough." Robert's mouth started upward, nibbling up the path he had taken going down earlier. When it reached Elaine's neck, his cock was at her entrance. He hesitated, "Not sure," Elaine moaned as her body reached up and took him in. The suddenness of it surprised him. The shock triggered him. His hands grasped the bed, his face burrowed into Elaine's neck, a sob escaped as his body jerked and spasmed, pumping until he was empty. As Robert's body relaxed, the intensity of sex over, his mind came back to itself. His first time, in high school, had been sloppy and rushed. "There, I've done it. Glad that's over with." With Ariana, afterward, he felt the warmth of her pure love flowing through him, with Sydney, incomplete and empty. Now, as his body sank down onto Elaine, he felt something different. He felt shame. Elaine came over often during the week. Each time she would direct Robert, move his head and hands where she wanted stimulation, like a personal dildo, a toy that she could direct and control to her satisfaction. Each time, Robert would think, "No more," but each time, as Elaine moaned and convulsed, Robert's passion took over, and he would be pumping and crying and ejaculating into her. One time Elaine found the jar, Kelly's jar. Robert thought he kept that hidden. "Here, put some on me." "Oh, God. That's intense." She had Robert make her climax over and over. The fragrance of Kelly's lotion mixed with the odor of Elaine's perfume filled Robert's bedroom with an unwelcome stench. After that, Robert hid the jar and claimed he couldn't find it when Elaine next asked for a treatment. Throughout the week, after the sex, they would drink the wine Elaine brought over. Sex and wine, both good for opening the mind, and the mouth. "Does Kelly have a girlfriend named Janie?" Robert once asked. Elaine looked surprised. "Is Janie back?" "She's mentioned a Janie. It sounded like they are really close. I think they met at the cottage." "There's no Janie. That's someone Kelly pretends to be sometimes. But I thought that got worked out of her." Elaine thought for a moment. "Janie seems to be one of the more persistent ones. She came back with Kelly after her abortion. Well, this is someone Kelly seems to be friends with. There was a real Janie once, but that was a long time ago, and that was in Chicago, not at the cottage. Kelly may have been 5 or 6. I worked nights, so a neighbor girl came over to babysit. She may have been 9 or 10. That only lasted for about 6 months. What happened? Kelly didn't like Janie and gave her all kinds of problems. One night Janie had had it. She called me while I was working and said she was bringing Kelly to me. She couldn't take it anymore. I told her not to. I was working. She hung up. Later that night, Kelly did show up at my work, but it was the police who brought her. They said Janie had been killed." "What, that's... what happened?" The information was sketchy. All they knew for sure was that Janie and Kelly were waiting on the platform to catch the L. Somehow, Janie fell off as the train approached, and she was run over. Elaine poured some more wine into her glass, then offered the bottle to Robert. He shook his head. He'd had enough. Elaine smiled and filled his glass. There wasn't any more investigation. Janie was just another statistic. We were considered white trash. She was black trash. It only got a brief mention in the newspapers. Anyway, that was a while ago. Most of the week, Robert and Elaine talked about Elaine. Elaine was Elaine's favorite subject. Her health, her various medical conditions, the pains she had in so many places throughout her body, Robert wondered how she could be so sexually active, the drugs her several doctors had her take with her frequent discussions with friends, family, the housekeeper, and people at the spa. Near the top of her pitiful life was the difficult, delinquent, and ungrateful Kelly. Kelly wasn't planned, but I had her anyway. I met her father where I worked. It was a one-night stand. I never saw him again, and he never knew. Elaine took a drink of wine. I should have had her aborted. That's what my friends all told me to do. She's always in the way. Elaine smiled at Robert. I worked as a dancer back then. On the stage? Ballet? Oh, sweet, naive Robert. No. Elaine emitted a wine-soaked sigh. That's how I met Mr. Gallo. He would come and watch me perform. I realized I was getting to him. He wanted me. I thought, this is my chance. I made him wait. Made him want it. That took a lot of skill. Mr. Gallo is someone who takes what he wants. He's not used to waiting. But he did. He actually dated me. Can you imagine? I'd have him buy me presents. I knew I had him. He bought me a cockatoo. I had always wanted one. It was silly, I suppose. At the time, Kelly and I lived on the second floor of a tenement in a small one-bedroom apartment. That bird was so noisy. Kelly hated it. But I taught it to say, I love you. I'd have it say that whenever Mr. Gallo would come over to visit. I named it Birdie. Not very imaginative, I suppose. But that's what Mr. Gallo called it. Well, he called it the bird. How's the bird? He would ask. Did you teach the bird to do anything? Eventually, I let him spend the night. I'd make Kelly stay in the living room with Birdie while we would go into the bedroom. After a few weeks, Mr. Gallo invited me and Kelly to go on a one-week cruise with him. I knew he was going to propose. I told him Kelly could stay home. How old was Kelly? 8. Robert looked at Elaine. Don't judge me, Robert. I needed to take care of myself. Anyway, Mr. Gallo insisted Kelly come too. He had taken to her from the time he first saw her. He'd tease her and give her little pinches and hugs. I was thankful for that. A woman with a little kid as baggage is not a very attractive package. I was so excited. I was a nervous wreck getting ready for it. The day we were to leave, I still hadn't packed everything. I made Kelly help me. She said she needed to pack her stuff. That was silly, I told her. You were just a kid. She didn't have that much she needed to bring. We just finished with my packing when we saw Mr. Gallo's car pull up to the curb. I grabbed a couple of my bags and started down to meet him. You don't keep Mr. Gallo waiting. Get the rest of my bags and bring yours and come on, I called behind me. I need 5 minutes, she said. Well, hurry up. And be sure and fill the water and food bowls for Birdie. That cruise was the most wonderful time I ever had. He did propose to me. I knew my life would be changed after that. And Kelly's too. Robert felt he needed to say that. Of course Kelly's too. What's good for me is good for her. It was wonderful until we got back. Mr. Gallo left me and Kelly at the curbside. He had some business to attend to. When we got into the apartment, I didn't hear Birdie. That was unusual. He always let out loud squawks whenever I'd come into the room. I couldn't see any movement in his cage. He was always so active. I knew something was wrong. I went over to his cage and looked in. Elaine paused to take another drink, but then didn't and put her glass down. He was dead. Robert did not like where this was going. Oh, no. What happened? He starved to death. That wasn't because of Kelly? Yes, it was. How do you know? Were his food and water dishes empty? Did Kelly forget to fill them? They were full. It wasn't her fault. I'm sure of it. What she did, Robert. What she did was so. Elaine paused at the memory. She would have been in a hurry when you left. She forgot. She didn't have time. She had time to do what she did. Robert took a breath.
What?
Bertie had tape bound around him, around his wings and legs, like a mummy. It was pretty clumsily put on. He must have put up a fight. That would have been done so he couldn't move. Then his beak was stapled shut.
Chapter 19. Stone Child.
And the Lord God took the clay of the earth and fashioned a man. In his own image he made him. Then he blew furious fire onto the man and turned him to stone. Robert could not sleep. A bird with its beak stapled shut kept flopping through his head. Mrs. Gallo had left and would not be back. Sam and Kelly were coming home tomorrow. He tossed and turned. It couldn't have been Kelly. Could it? She couldn't do anything like that? But what was she really capable of? The image of her threatening to slit his throat penetrated his brain and stayed stuck there. He got out of bed and went to his computer and searched the internet for answers. Kelly had been right, he was a C person, even subpar. He knew he was inadequate. He wished he had studied more. In college the classes were dry and analytical, but now it was personal. Now he needed answers. Mrs. Gallo said Kelly had a split personality. He started with that. At medicinenet.com, he found that a split personality was a multiple personality disorder, a neurosis in which the personality becomes dissociated into two or more distinct parts, each of which becomes dominant and controls behavior from time to time to the exclusion of the other parts. A modern name for this condition is dissociative identity disorder. Dissociative identity disorder, DID, yes, at least he had remembered the label correctly. Robert searched on that term. He read at a Psychology Today website that it was a severe condition in which two or more distinct identities, or personality states, are present in and alternately take control of an individual. Usually, a primary identity carries the individual's given name and is passive, dependent, guilty, and depressed. The alter's characteristics, including name, reported age and gender, vocabulary, general knowledge, and predominant mood, contrast with those of the primary identity. The various identities may deny knowledge of one another, be critical of one another, or appear to be in open conflict. Robert looked out the window. It was still dark outside. Yeah. Open conflict is what he heard that night, when he had called the police. Kelly screaming. That other voice threatening her. Particular identities may emerge in specific circumstances. Transitions from one identity to another are often triggered by psychosocial stress. Why some people develop DID is not entirely understood, but they frequently report having experienced severe physical and sexual abuse, particularly during childhood. That's what I thought. Elaine said they had not abused Kelly. Like hell. The things she described she and Sam did to Kelly. What Kelly told me, being locked in her room for days. Physical abuse, yes. And that abortion, forced on her when she was 14. Was Kelly sexually molested? Robert had pushed Mrs. Gallo for more information about that, but she stiffened up and would only say, Kelly was not abused. Robert stared at his computer screen and summarized what he had learned. So there is the person, split in two, a primary and an alterne. Okay. Kelly and her Janie. The alterne could remain hidden and free of the restrictions and expectations of society. What could such a thing become? He pictured the mummified Bertie, struggling to eat and drink, fighting for its life, and searched under psychopath. A Wikipedia article provided the etymology of the word. The word psychopathy is a joining of the Greek words psyche, soul, and pathos, suffering, feeling. Soul, suffering, Robert thought of Kelly. At times she seemed so lost and alone. Robert smiled to himself. But aren't we all? Aren't we all suffering souls? The dictionary.com definition popped up at the top of his search. The word was a noun, psychopath, plural noun, psychopaths. Shit. What if you ever needed to use the plural? More than one psychopath at a time? Robert thought of the night of the zombies. A person suffering from chronic mental disorder with abnormal or violent social behavior. Synonyms: madman, madwoman, maniac, lunatic, psychotic, sociopath, infirmaloony, fruitcake, nutcase, nutjob, nut, psycho, schizo, head case, sicko, screwball, crazy, kook, loon. Robert remembered from his college classes that you're not supposed to use the term psychopath or sociopath. That's not an approved diagnosis anymore. Professionals use a different term instead, antisocial personality disorder. Antisocial personality disorder. That seemed like a polite phrase. Sensitively correct. He and his C friends preferred the synonyms, nutjob and psycho being at the top of the list. WebMD.com told him, psychopaths are more cold-hearted and calculating. They carefully plot their moves and use aggression in a planned-out way to get what they want. Robert would have added, as a spider constructs the web to capture her prey. In one of their after several drinks philosophy, religion and life in general discussions, Manny and Robert had talked about Carl Jung. Robert had remembered reading something about Jung in college. Manny liked the guy's ideas, but then again, Manny was an old kind of guy. Robert searched for Jung. In Wikipedia, he read about the shadow, psychology. Everyone carries a shadow, Jung had written, and the less it is embodied in the individual's conscious life, the blacker and denser it is. The shadow is the primitive animal instincts we bring with us out of the womb. Then our conscious mind develops in early childhood, and the battle is on. Sometimes the shadow can overwhelm a person's actions, according to Jung, for example, when the conscious mind is shocked, confused, or paralyzed by indecision. Robert realized Jung's thinking had been passed over in favor of more modern labels, but his shadow seemed a more apt description than the current, vanilla antisocial personality disorder. The unconscious is not just evil by nature, he read at asquotes.com. It is also the source of the highest good, not only dark but also light, not only bestial, semi-human, and demonic but superhuman, spiritual, and, in the classical sense of the word, divine. The divine, the spiritual, have always been a part of humankind, cave drawings, Greek and Roman mythology, Shakespeare, the Bible. In his younger days, after Catholic and before, well, before now, Robert had sought for belief in some higher being that would explain it all, that would make it all have sense. There would be a reason for faith. His friends at college had decided that was for the weak-minded. Reason was sufficient, and faith meaningless. Most of them expected science would eventually answer all the questions. Robert didn't go that far. He believed there was an area no science could go to. Not even the astronomy classes he took, that looked into the farthest reaches of the universe, could explain an eternal beginning. They saw in the beginning, but no further. No mathematics or instruments of science glimpsed beyond, there was no beyond for them. They had come to the end of their abilities. Reason was gone. Now they were at the border with the spiritual and the supernatural. Only faith could catch sight of what was beyond. But how explain this complexity we live in without a great watchmaker? The complexity is its own explanation, they would say. It has happened, so it is possible. And given an eternity, what is possible, will happen. Robert never played golf, but given an eternity, he would get a hole-in-one every time he swings at the ball, and, in eternity, he will miss the ball every time he swings at it. Robert's quest for reason faith was never successful. The priest in his high school had described faith. It's like standing on the edge of an abyss, he said, with nothing but blackness before you, and putting your hand out and stepping off, believing someone will take your hand. That didn't work for Robert. It was not in him. He was afraid of the dark. Robert's college friends thought the human mind was sufficient to judge between right and wrong, and eventually select the right path. Robert felt they must be right, although he recognized his path was as straight as an earthworm's. And is the human mind such a flawless standard? With Kelly, he was not so sure. Touch me, and I'll slit your throat. That was not Kelly. At that moment, her face had contorted into someone else, something else, a malignant, threatening creature. Robert remembered its feral sneer. Daring him to touch, desiring that he would so it could slit his throat. Kelly's mind was split, and his powerless confronting it. Good and evil, the eternal dissonance ringing in our ears. The good rings so clear, but why does the evil seem louder? The spirit of Moby Dick entered Ahab through the wound it caused, merging with Ahab's soul, festering during the long voyage home, driving Ahab insane, then lingered in the deep, biding its time to emerge. Ahab was mad, but not crazy. He hid his insanity until the next voyage, when the spirit rose and destroyed them all. Stevenson thought the battle in our souls did not end well either, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The two started off as equals, right? Maybe even the good doctor being more prominent. But then Hyde started gaining. At each transition, he was more limber, quicker to move. The good was complacent. Eventually, the evil prevailed. The slide to destruction seems inevitable. Like a galaxy being swallowed by the black hole at its center. Do we all tend to destruction, to evil? Manny's glass of piss a crystal ball, the putrid always prevailing? Robert clicked on the back arrow of his computer until he came to the Psychology Today website. Something he had skimmed over in his initial cramming, something he was now trying to recall, part of the description of dissociative identity disorder. There it is. There. He read. Some people describe this as an experience of possession. Robert felt a tingling over his spine as if someone was brushing their fingers on him. His arms prickled with goosebumps. Possession form identities often manifest as behaviors that appear as if a spirit or other supernatural being has taken control of the person. He did not like discussions about the supernatural. Those things came at you from the other side of the border. It gave him the willies. A link took him to a passage in Deuteronomy. The final instructions from the desert God, Jehovah, before sending his people to the bloody taking of their promised land. If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father, or the voice of his mother, and that, when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto them. Then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him, and bring him out unto the elders of his city, and unto the gate of his place. And they shall say unto the elders of his city, This our son is stubborn and rebellious, he will not obey our voice, he is a glutton, and a drunkard. And all the men of his city shall stone him with stones, that he die, so shalt thou put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear, and fear. How wretched must a child be for his parents to have him executed? Robert thought. How corrupt is he, for the nation of Israel to spit him out, let he who is without sin. How evil a child for God to condemn him? Now too late to repent, to turn from sin and see the face of God, the smile of grace now gone. Too late to be redeemed, to be delivered from sin. Too late to atone and reconcile. The sustaining cycle of sin, repentance, and renewal is rent, and a stone child, unforgiven, is cast into hell. It was mid-morning. Robert had searched through the night. He was following Kelly's path, chasing her through its twists and turns, stuck by the brambles and thistles in her life, an abused girl, her personhood split, then she, or her altern, a psychopath, a shadow, then, what was holding Bertie when its beak was stapled shut? What was standing next to Janie on the train platform before she stumbled to her death? Something raced across Robert's mind. He thought he heard scraping on the floor coming toward him. A shiver started in the middle of his back. It worked up his spine, like the finger of someone standing behind him. The hairs on the back of his neck stood up. A hand pressed down on the top of his head and became a thought, then a question. He called someone who might have the answer to that question, the priest who had presided at his father's funeral. Father, can someone be possessed?